There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Bench with Bubba. This will be episode 8. Tonight, I am joined by a special guest. He's been on a podcast with me before, and you've probably heard him on some of his own stuff. He's quite the baseball guy in his baseball season, and he just got to enjoy a great Game 5 victory. We're joined by none other than Brock Miller. You can find him on Twitter at BrockNessMonster. How are you doing, Brock?
Yeah, man, doing pretty good. Still a little bit pumped up from that win last night for the Dodgers. Of course, you know, I'm a Dodgers fan, and, you know, exactly good news for UNL, but it was, you know, funny thing about that game last night, I got a lot of texts from, you know, buddies or messages on Twitter and whatnot, and the thing about that game is the theme from all those messages was, I didn't care which team won that game, but it was awesome. It was still awesome. And, you know, obviously that's good for the sport there. So, yep, a lot of fun on Thursday night. And, you know, we're looking forward. We've got, you know, Cubs and Dodgers, going to be a tough one there. And then, of course, as we are recording right now, we've got the Blue Jays and the Indians going on right now. So, interesting stuff. And then there were four. That's the title that everybody's using there, I think.
Yep, we are definitely down to the final four. And you said it best. You didn't really care who won. And that's been a lot of these games. There hasn't been too many, you know, like crazy blowouts or one-sided affairs for the most part. It's been a lot of really good baseball. It started out with those wild card play-in games. Those were just epic, epic baseball games. And as a baseball fan, as like a diehard like yourself and myself, or even just the average fan, it's hard not to enjoy this playoff baseball. It's been great, and now you're getting some teams, especially in the American League, that haven't really, you know, been in the spotlight a ton. Toronto got their run last year, but this is big for Cleveland. They're outside of the Cubs, they're on the longest World Series drought, and it could be big. It could be real crazy. I know you don't want to hear it, but a Cubs-Indians World Series would be one for the ages, in my opinion. But there's a long ways to go for that. And, yeah, long ways to go. But the ALDS and the NLDS just wrapped up, as you said, last night with the Dodgers' victory. What were your kind of biggest surprises, good or bad or both, in the two series?
Well, you know, I hate to be biased here. And, you know, I'm probably going to cling on to that Los Angeles-Washington matchup there. But I definitely, the biggest surprise was Dave Roberts managing. You know, something that I had noted on Twitter, probably paired up with a couple choice four-letter words, was that he managed a lot like Don Mattingly did, you know. And that was kind of a bummer. You know, everybody was you know, nobody's really sad to see Don Mattingly go. You know, and we were looking for change there. We were looking for something new, and the idea of Dave Roberts from the get go, a new manager, never really managed before. You know, getting somebody like that, and especially I just, this is my own opinion. But there was really no way that the Dodgers were going to hire anybody but a first-year manager. You know, they didn't want to bring in a Joe Torre. Somebody's going to come in and just do his own thing. You know, the upper management, there's like 13 general managers in that front office there for the Dodgers. And they've got their own, you know, way that they want things to go. So I figured from the get-go that it was going to be a first-year manager there for the Dodgers. And, of course, that's what we got, the two finalists there. Gabe Kapler was the other finalist for that job there in L.A. And you know, so with the first-year manager there, I really kind of hope, you know, okay, we're, you know, maybe we're going to see some real interesting stuff, you know, from Dave Roberts here. Maybe the front office is going to hand him down some good notes there. And we'll see some unique stuff there. And just for 162 games, it was the same crap. It was the same thing. It was the same, you know, just sticking to a bunch of traditions. And, you know, and it was really annoying. I was not really thrilled with that. And then in that series, you know, we saw Dave, you know, really pull out all the stops there. You know, the backs were up against the wall, and he did everything he could. I thought that was really shrewd. Bringing in the closer to close that game down in the seventh inning. You know, I talked about this with my boss. That game, you know, just with the way that the momentum was going and with the middle of that lineup coming up in the seventh inning, you were going to save that game in the seventh inning, you know, regardless of, you know, some stupid stat that, you know, us fantasy guys pay way too much attention. Well, we paid a lot of attention to it, but even fantasy guys are getting away from, you know, looking at saves and, you know, using saves in fantasy sports there. So, you know, he wasn't going to get the save there coming in the seventh inning, but, you know, he was saving that game there. And then, of course, you know, Kershaw coming in there and something really interesting. I don't know if you'd caught this. I read an article, I believe it was Tim Brown from Yahoo Sports, an article there. Kershaw was not going to pitch in that game, you know, during the day. You know, Dave Roberts, no way, that's crazy. Rick Honeycutt, no, that's crazy. In the eighth inning, before he went out there in the bullpen to start warming up, he walked over to Honeycutt. I feel pretty good, man. No way, no way, Clayton, no way. That's what they told him, no way. And he went over to Dave. I mean, you know, and this went deep. I mean, Andrew Friedman, you know, the vice president or whatever his role actually is. We all know what he does, but that name kind of eludes me there. You know, even Andrew Friedman said that they discussed 100 different options of how they were going to go about pitching in this game. And the only one that didn't even come up was use Clayton Kershaw. And there it went. There you had it. So what do you think about that? I know that, you know, the Giants here in years past, I think 2 years ago there, we saw Bumgarner go out there and just, you know, they kind of rode Bumgarner there in that World Series. And then, of course, you know, what, 10, 12 years ago there, the Diamondbacks riding Curt Schilling and Randy Johnson. Remember that? The Game 7 of that World Series, I think those guys combined to pitch like seven innings, and neither one of them had anything left in the tank, really, and they got it done anyways. What do you think about all that?
No, I absolutely loved it. Like you said, as an outsider, and we've talked Giants-Dodgers a lot, and we can respect each other and talk about it, unlike, you know, others that are involved. And I love Clayton Kershaw. I have nothing bad to say about the man. And I was, you know, throughout the season, like you said, did a lot of things just like Donnie Baseball. And even the first few games of the series, it was looking like he's going to screw this up just like Donnie Baseball. And then you said it best when he brought Jansen in the seventh. It's what people have been saying that have been paying attention, that necessarily need to close the game in the ninth. The most important part might be in the seventh or eighth inning, and that's where they need to be. Your best pitcher needs to be in that moment. And you saw Tito Francona do it in the opening round against the Red Sox in game one. Come in the fifth or sixth for an inning or two, and then he had his closer Allen come in for a couple, and it was unorthodox, but it worked, and it set the tone. And in a game five of that magnitude the Dodgers had, if you don't bring Kershaw in, I'm not saying that they don't win, but, you know, it's like, ask Buck Showalter how he feels about not using his best weapon to get to the next round. You have to use everything you have. And like the Curt Schilling and Randy Johnson and Bumgarner argument, so that was the World Series. So you literally have nowhere to go from there. The part where I could see the frustration of using Kershaw is now maybe game two starter, if not game three, and now you're limiting his bullets in the next round. But where if he didn't use him, he might go game one or game two for sure. But you got to get to that next round, and you got to do these things. And so I can't fault Dave Roberts for at all. I know it's your million-dollar arm, and you need him for the future, but I'm pretty sure they say flags fly forever. And if that gets you to the next round and gets that momentum going and you guys come out gangbusters, and hell, you might not even need to use Kershaw as dramatically if you come out with a big win tomorrow night in Wrigley, and you're facing a juggernaut in the Cubs, and we'll get to that. And that's just – it's a whole other story. But I love the move. The postseason, you throw the quote-unquote game plans out the window, and Roberts did a phenomenal job, and he deserves – some big kudos for that, and the guys got it done.
Yeah. And you know, it just the more I got thinking there, what's the best, you know, the best bullpen we saw win a World Series there. You know, for me, what was that, 1999 with or maybe 98 before that even? It was, you know, John Wetland closing out games. But then Mariano Rivera, way before 98 even, a young Mariano Rivera being used as a fireman. Just, you know, when the middle of the line, if the middle of the lineup comes up in the seventh inning or for like the last out of the seventh and the first couple outs in the eighth, or, you know, whenever that happened, that was Mariano Rivera. And then you had John Wetland, you know, to come in there and slam the door in the ninth inning there. You know, that's how that gets done. And that's, I think that's a lot about, what, Terry Francona is doing right now, using Andrew Miller, using him as a fireman. And then Brian Shaw is closing them out. And I think it's really similar because I think Andrew Miller is one of the couple best, relief pitchers in baseball right now. Yep. Certainly better than Brian Shaw. I'm a Brian Shaw fan, you know, good relief pitcher, of course. But I think Andrew Miller is far superior. But using Andrew Miller, though, he's a little bit more valuable when you just take him and match him up against the middle of that our team's lineup and let him go in there and get some swings and misses and get the job done. So it kind of reminds me of that Yankees bullpen there. And that one was ridiculously successful. And I think we're going to find out how it works out for the Indians. But I think the Indians, if they can put a couple runs on the board like they did in this one, you know, Francisco Lindor here in game one hitting a two-run home run off the fly ball pitcher Marco Estrada, a couple runs on the board, I think they're going to, you know, find a way to use that bullpen to shut it down and get the win there.
Yeah, and I'm going to segue here. Talking about bad bullpens, that brings me to one of my worst moments, and I am biased on this one. But the San Francisco Giants, who I struggled with all season, especially the second half, witnessing their 30-second blown save of the season might have been the hardest thing I've ever seen. That was horrific. Up 5-2, Matt Moore out of all guys goes and throws an absolute gem. And everyone's second-guessing, and I'll get your opinion on this too. He was at 120 pitches after eight. He's coming off a year where he had Tommy John surgery. I was shocked. I thought he was done after six. I thought he was done after seven. He went eight strong, double-digit strikeouts, had the Giants in the chance to force the game five with Cueto on the mound. And then he goes to the bullpen, and literally they didn't get an out for the four or five pitchers that were out there before the game was tied. It was horrific. It was horrible. I love how they swore at the trade deadline they didn't need to pay for a closer because they were in on Andrew Miller, they were in on Chapman, and they didn't pull the trigger. And now they came out the day after and said, yes, our number one priority is shoring up the bullpen. Well, no shit. But it was just unbelievable to watch. It was horrible. Would you have left Matt Moore out there after 120 pitches?
Well... I'm going to answer with a non-answer and say, dude, I'm glad that's not my job. Yeah. You know, like you said, that bullpen struggled all year long. And I think we all kind of called this at the deadline when they didn't make that move for Andrew Miller or Chapman or really any of the other guys. They did get, Will Myers, who I'm a fan of. And I believe they've got some more team control, a couple more years of Will Smith. A couple more years of him, good left-handed arm there in the bullpen. But I think we all kind of called that, though. That was an obvious mistake when the trade deadline passed and they really didn't, fortify that bullpen, because I think that, Giants had a pretty solid squad there, minus that bullpen. And it wasn't like we got to the second half there. Obviously, Giants had the best record in baseball at the All-Star break, right?
Yeah. That's why it was so hard to watch. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, you got the best record in baseball here, but I mean, the one thing you need, go out there and get it. It's, these assets, right fielder or a catcher or whatever, the cheapest out of all of those is a bullpen piece, bullpen pieces. You got to spend, you're going to put $150 million a year product out there, and it's like $155 million is going to be a little bit too much, I think you got to find a way to bring somebody put in that bullpen there. So, going back to your question there, Matt Moore, 120 pitches. He, what was that? Wasn't that against the Dodgers there? He went and I think he threw, he had the no hitter going against the Dodgers. I think he was at 120. Did he throw 127 pitches in that one?
Yeah, he did.
It was 127, I believe. That's off the top of my head. He looked decent in that ninth inning. I would hate to, base such an important decision on something like, well, this one time a month ago. I never liked doing that. Even with that struggling bullpen, I don't think I could have put him out there in the ninth inning. Like you, I thought, okay, good six innings. Man, he was good. Whoa. He's going back out for the seventh. Okay. All right. Well, we'll see how this goes. Wow, man, he got through seven. What a performance, And Matt Moore, I've been a Matt Moore fan. When he first came up, he was a number one prospect in baseball like 8 years ago or 7 years ago for Tampa Bay. I mean, he was, we have Corey Seager last offseason. Like he was the guy. So I kind of followed him pretty closely and stuff since then. And that Tommy John really derailed what was a nice start to a career. He looked real good there as a real young kid. Came up, I think 20 years old, had a big league deal before he even got promoted to the major leagues. Kind of a unique deal there, and was really pitching well. And the Tommy John kind of put a wrench in things, obviously. Like you mentioned, it's the first year coming off Tommy John surgery. He did have. And maybe you want to look at a different way that start a month ago against the Dodgers, throwing all those pitches. Maybe even that's like another reason to not try to do it again. He went that far once. Let's not push it. So even with the struggling bullpen, I don't think I could have put him out there again. I probably would have not pushed it past seven myself. But that's just kind of my style, though. That's kind of like what I buy into. Everybody's got their own, ways of looking at these things. Last night that Dodger game there, Kenley Jansen, I noted going into that ninth inning, well, man, look how many pitches he's thrown. He's approaching a career high. This is not really a good place to find out if he's capable of doing that. You know what I mean? kind of a tough spot to do that. And you know what he did? He came out there in the ninth inning, and Jansen was throwing fastballs 2 feet too high. The next pitch was, a fastball in the dirt or cutter, excuse me. He was all over the place. He got past that career high in pitches, and bam, just like that. The stuff was still there. He's still throwing 95 with movement and stuff like that, but he had no clue where it's going. I see stuff like that, and I don't know. It's not the Verducci effect. If you're familiar there, I don't know if it's that, and I don't know if that. If I would have any hard lines to stick to, any real rules to stick to there, but I don't even think I could have pushed him past seven there. So, you got to lean on the bullpen. And when that happens, you gotta turn around and you gotta look up there at the skybox up there next to the announcer, where you know where the brass is sitting, and say, "You did this."
Yeah, pretty much.
You got to use the bullpen at some point there. So I probably would have done the same thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. And one thing I will say is I'm not hating on Bochy. I think he's one of the best managers in all of baseball. And I think he was at a point, the way the whole season's gone, there was no answer at all. And he was just trying anything he could without it blowing up, and it just didn't work. But we'll digress on that one. Last but not least, real quick, I'll kind of sum up the ALDS together. I was shocked that they both ended in sweeps. And that's nothing against the Indians or the Blue Jays. They're both really good teams. I'm definitely more shocked that the Red Sox got swept. That offense got absolutely shut down by the Tribe, and that was just an absolute shocker to me. Kind of a sad way to see Big Poppy go out, but it is what it is. But, yeah, that was a very big surprise in the ALDS for me. But let's move on to the ALCS. Like you said, we just finished up game one tonight. Indians 2-0 over the Jays. Kluber dealing. Lindor double with a two-run homer. What are you kind of seeing? What do you think kind of unfolds with this series now that, especially with Trevor Bauer getting pushed back to game three, maybe having to go to game four, slicing his finger, fixing his drone? So you might get Clevinger twice and Tomlin twice, which is not really a recipe for success. What are you seeing in the ALCS? Brock. Come in, Brock. And we've lost Brock. Well, shit. That's not good. Okay, so I was thinking, we got the Jays, big win for Kluber tonight. He's been filthy over 13 innings, lights out in the first two rounds of the series. And then the like, scary part, like I said, is Clevinger and Tomlin. Tomlin was phenomenal against the Red Sox, just absolutely lights out. And didn't see that one coming, but the Jays, Estrada threw well, gave up one big fly ball, and it's what he does. But you got Stroman, who could be a question mark with all the extra time off, but he looked great in his first start of the postseason. And then we have the likes of Hap, who potentially could be a Cy Young Award winner, one of the more criticized offseason signings, and got it done. The Indians usually do hit lefties rather well, so that makes that one very, very interesting. And it should be an interesting series. Cleveland picking up tonight was huge, but the Rogers Center will be absolutely rocking. So if they could steal game two at home, take a 2-0 lead into Toronto, that would be absolutely, absolutely filthy and could be big, big thing, big, big things with for the Indians. But I don't know. Indians-Cubs is what I'm looking at, and we'll see what happens when it comes to the next round. But with that being said, Brock has rejoined us. We got Brock. What are you seeing for that ALCS, Brock? Indians and Jays, what are you seeing unfolding there?
Yeah, kind of like I was mentioning earlier, you know, if those Indians bats can, you know, get a couple over on Toronto, I think that bullpen's going to prove to be a huge advantage there for the Indians. And the Indians offense in general, looking at the Blue Jays here, of course, you know, we had Marco Estrada tonight, who didn't pitch a bat or anything like that. David Price and Mark, and something that I like from Cleveland, if we look back at this season for way to runs created plus, had the Indians against right-handed pitching as the eighth best offense in baseball, about 4% above average there. You know, certainly not the Dodgers or Red Sox or anything like that, but you know, a really solid offense against right-handed pitching, the strikeout rate below 20%. you know, it's a good offense. They've got power. Carlos Santana, you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me. Carlos Santana hit a lot of home runs in the second half there. It wasn't Brian Dozier or anything like that, but, you know, Carlos Santana was really good. And, you know, and then you look at the Indians. What do they do against left-handed pitching? Seventh best in baseball. 107 weighted runs created plus against left-handed pitching there. So they're a good offense. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Oh, what did I do? David Price, not. I didn't mean David Price. I'm sorry. I got the wrong thing here. I'm a fan of the Indians offense because it doesn't really matter who they're going up against. You know, Marcus Stroman's, you know, a great pitcher. You know, Stroman had a good year there. Exceeded some of our expectations. We all expected Stroman to be solid. We expected in 2015, of course, but he, you know, blew out his knee there first week of the season. But it's just, you know, the Indians offense, I think they're going to be able to score a couple runs, and I think that bullpen's going to make the difference there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The lefty you're thinking of is K.A. Happ.
Happ. There. I can't. Yeah. Yeah. It's a long week. Big difference, David Price, J.A. Happ.
Exactly. Let's look into the NLCS. We've got the Cubbies versus the Dodgers now. Obviously, you know the Dodgers better than most, and I did witness the Cubs for four games, and it was beautiful. The Cubs are absolutely locked and loaded. That offense, that whole lineup is filthy. You got to like their pitching staff, 1-4. They're going to throw at you. And then if you get to Chapman, well, good night. Just pure filth. But the Dodgers aren't no slouches, and I'll let you break that one down. But what are you looking at in the NLCS?
Oh, one quick note I did want to throw in for that last one there. Yan Gomes is back. Yan Gomes was a catcher for the Indians. I think especially the DFS world was aware of what Yan Gomes did there in 2015. He definitely had a rough season here in 2016, but he missed the last 2 months with an injury, and he's back. So Yan Gomes is going to be out there catching some games for the Indians here. He is on the roster to face the Blue Jays here. Yeah, as far as this Dodgers and Cubs, it's been tough to kind of, you know, like today, you know, of course it's, I couldn't get anything done at work. You know, you're at your desk and, you know, place I work, we got like 60 people at work there, you know, and every single person's got to walk by and, hey, how about them Dodgers, you know? And, and I want to tell them, you know, like, oh, you know, momentum or we're going to do this. You know, I want to tell him something nice, but like, I just, it's like my duty to tell them exactly how I feel. And I don't feel good about it. Like, I'm a Dodgers fan. I'm going to root for my team to win. And I hope they do win. And there's a chance that they win. Cause if we know anything about baseball, we know that really weird shit happens a lot. But all of that said, I've got to tell you that the Cubs have got pretty big advantages, you know, up and down the rosters. They've, as if they needed a little bit more help, they've got home field advantage, two games in Chicago, three in LA, and then the final two in Chicago if need be. I don't know what to say about that. You know, and as if all of that wasn't enough, Chicago's got some seriously solid left-handed pitching that they can throw at the Dodgers. A couple numbers I want to throw out here. The Dodgers against left-handed pitching in 2016, per weighted runs created plus, 75. Dead last. Last. They're just last. They're just – there's like the Phillies, better. Cincinnati Reds, the Yankees, other offenses that didn't do shit, better against left-handed pitching. And if you watch that series with the Washington Nationals the game that I went to, game one, game 3. That was Monday in L.A. there, first game of the series in L.A. Dusty Baker, we all know Dusty Baker. We know Dusty Baker. We know, you know, traditionalist type of guy, and, you know, everything's done the way it wants, you know, the way it used to be done, because that's just the way it's done. And, you know, we don't need no stinking number. We know Dusty Baker. All right. And even Dusty Baker listened to his front office when they said, hey, dude, get out there and throw left-handed pitchers at these guys. Even he listened to those guys, you know, paid a little bit of attention to some of the splits here. And that game on Monday, you know, they started with Gio Gonzalez going up against the Dodgers there. You know, so the Dodgers rolled out a right-handed heavy lineup. I think Seager was the only, you know, pretty sure. No, Seager. I think Jock actually played center field and just hit eighth there. Charlie Culbertson hit seventh, I believe, on Monday. Rolled out that against left-handed pitching lineup that the Dodgers had, and it was just atrocious. And, you know, usually when you see a left-handed starter come out for a team, as soon as that starter starts wearing down, or if he's, you know, not doing well, the manager is going to gravitate towards bringing in the right-handed pitcher that he wants. So he's not going to follow up a left-handed starter with a left-handed reliever, because, you know, then he brings in the righty, and then a bunch of those, you know, platoon bats are going to have to get pulled out, and they're going to start wearing down the roster, start pulling guys off the bench and crossing guys off the list there. You know, especially, you know, earlier on in the game, you know, if it happens to be the fifth inning, sixth inning, or whatever, they want to, you know, get that list, you know, narrowed down there so that their team doesn't have as many options. Well, Dusty Baker on Monday, we pull out Gio, and then he brought in, I believe it was Solis, another left-hander, and he pitched, you know, one and a third, one and two thirds, maybe even went two innings, I can't remember exactly, and then he was done. Then it was Repchinski. And they just lefty after lefty after lefty, you know, until, of course, it got late in the game. And then you've got to go to your relief aces, Sean Kelly and Mark Melanson. You know, but up until that point, they kept that weaker lineup for the Dodgers in the game. And that's what makes it such a tough matchup for the Dodgers, because, you know, of course, you're going to see John Lester, you know, John Lester's left-hand pitcher, an ace. Ended up having a great year there. I think he had a little bit of a rocky start to the season, but down the stretch, damn, dude, he was good. As if he needed to be a little bit sharper here to square up with the Dodgers. But you know, and then you got left-handed, you know, guys in the bullpen. You got Travis Wood going there and pitch two innings, you know, maybe hit a home run off the bench if you need him to.
He's
a really unique player. You know, my boss brought this up, you know. Of course, Trav Wood, you know. Travis Wood and Mike Leake, both of those guys, you know, came up for the Reds right about the same time, you know. And both those guys, you know, one's left-handed, one's right-handed, but kind of similar pitchers. You know, not like amazing careers or whatever, but they've stuck in the major leagues for a long enough time. But both those guys could hit, though, both of them. I mean, Mike Leake, I think he hit two home runs his first year in the major leagues as a starting pitcher, or maybe even more. You know, Mike Leake, he could swing the bat. Of course, Travis. Oh, but yeah, and there's I really want the list. Where's the list? Yeah, Travis, and then of course Mike Montgomery. I don't know that Montgomery's going to start a game for the Cubs. Certainly he is capable of. Have you seen anything? No.
I think he'll be coming out of the pen. I think they're going with the same rotation of Lester, Hendricks, Arrieta, and Lackey.
Yeah, yeah. Because I could see them replacing Lackey with Montgomery just for this set, just to go up against the Dodgers there and put two left-handed starters out there. As opposed to just one. But nonetheless, you know, if they're not going to have Montgomery start, you know, game four, then I think that just means that they're going to use him as a swing man. And he's going to, you know, I think between Montgomery and Travis Wood, I bet you see those guys pitch as many innings as any of the starters on that team. I think they're really going to use those guys, get those left-handers in there and take advantage of a really glaring. I mean, I think if you have to look at all four of our remaining teams in the playoffs here, the Indians, the Blue Jays, and the Cubs and the Dodgers. The biggest glaring weakness out of any of those four teams has to be the Dodgers matching up against left-handed pitching. So, you know, Joe Maddon, he, all of us, you know, when I say us, I mean, you know, baseball Twitter or whatever, have been singing the praises of Joe Maddon for a long time, and I'm sure he's going to know to take advantage of that. So definitely going to be an uphill battle for the Dodgers here.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you said it right there at the end. Joe Maddon is by far, but I have strong opinions myself that he's one of the best, if not the best, manager in all of baseball. I think he's earned that through his time. The players love him. He gets results. And, yes, he will definitely know the Dodgers against lefties. That's why I think they'll keep Montgomery in the pen. It's like you said, Wood and Montgomery can both throw multiple innings to get to the cannon Aroldis Chapman to finish things off, and that could be a recipe for disaster. But and they might not even need to, because the way their starters have pitched most of the season, let alone last series, they're giving them 6-7-plus easy right now, and they're looking great at doing it. It's going to be an interesting series because you can't count the Dodgers out. They've shown production. They've got stuff done. The Giants, yes, I said it. They are a better team than the Giants. And so if the Giants can push them, I don't see why the Dodgers can't. And I'm looking at a Cleveland Cubs World Series. What are you looking at in the World Series?
Yeah, I can't really argue with that. And especially being able to see, you know, game one here, Cleveland's taking game one and game one going more or less kind of how we were expecting it to, makes me – kind of feel a little bit better about the read that I had on that series in the first place. But I definitely think that too. I want to say in defense of my Dodgers, look back over the last like 15 years or so, not for any good reason other than that's when I've been paying the most attention to baseball is the last 15 years. But you know, the teams that win in October, you know, those are the teams that are kind of getting healthy at the right time of the season. And they're playing well, you know, guys that, you know, of course they get along. I think that some of that stuff can get kind of overblown there. You know, these are a bunch of dudes that, you know, make a bunch of money playing sports. I have a feeling that overall most of those clubhouses are big groups of guys that kind of get along pretty well. But the Dodgers, there's, you know, these guys, there's kind of that kind of win for Vin. You know, of course, Vin Scully's last season, you know, as the Dodgers broadcaster, I hate to like put, you know, I'm not going to go out there and put money in on any of these narratives or anything like that. But if there's anything I've got to hold on to, maybe it's a couple of those, you know, win for Vin or whatever. But, you know, the Dodgers really did play well in September. They had the best record in baseball in September. I'm sure you remember this was 8 years ago. Maybe it was nine, maybe it was seven. The St. Louis Cardinals stunk. Mm-hmm. For like 5 months. They stunk. They were not a good team. They were not a playoff team. The Atlanta Braves were dominating, and it was just a foregone. It was like the end of August, and it was a foregone conclusion that the Braves were going to just, you know, keep walking away at that division, and we're going to be the powerhouse. And, the you know, I think Cardinals were like, I don't know, 10 games out of it. I don't know. They were out of it. And they snuck in as a wild card team. They just September, just annihilated September, and they snuck in with like, what was it, like an 82-80 record, I believe. I think that they were one game over 500 that season. Snuck into the playoffs as a wild card, and the rest is history. They won the World Series that year. They had a tough season, but I think they got like Jimmy Edmonds back. I think, you know, a couple key guys like that kind of came back at the end of the year there, and they played well at the right time of the season. They rolled right through October. So, you know, I think the Dodgers have a much better chance if maybe they gotten Trace Thompson or maybe Scott Van Slyke You know, one of those guys, if they got one of those guys back at the right time of the year, would have made them a little bit more formidable against left-handed pitching. You know, those were supposed to be their big platoon bats against left-handed pitching. You know, and of course those guys got hurt and those injuries really hurt that squad going up against the lefties there. But nonetheless, you know, Dodgers, you know, playing well here towards the end of the year. So I if we're going to ignore the numbers, and remember, I never ignore the numbers, but if we are, you know, maybe the Dodgers got some momentum on their side or maybe a little bit of win for Vin. But yeah, if I had to pick, I'm with you there, Toronto and Cleveland.
And the one,
I'm sorry, Chicago and Cleveland.
You know what you meant. But I agree, and I know we've talked before that you are a big stats guy and you know your stats very, very well. But there is something really weird, especially in the postseason, and I've witnessed it with the Giants. Momentum, it works. It's a weird, weird thing, and I know it's like there's no proven statistical analysis on it. But I should have looked it up ahead of time. But since the wild card era has been here, I want to say the wild card team's probably winning at least 50% of these World Series. I'm just pulling that out of my ass, but I'm not at the same time. So I know the Giants were what two of theirs were. The Angels in 02 were a wild card. The Cardinals, like you said, it's got to be close to 50%. And those teams were battling it hard coming into to the playoffs. So there's something to it. And I know it's not everything, and I know I'm blowing smoke out of a lot of people's theories, and they're going to be pissy or whatever. But there is something to it. Not everything, but there is something. Something to sleep on and enjoy.
It's one of those things, you know, hold on to, you know, because it's something to maybe try to explain some of the variants that we are no doubt about to see.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, well, that kind of wraps up our playoff part of this, and hopefully we got that nailed, which I thought was pretty good. And let's move on to just kind of some quick, you know, baseball talk. Award season's around the corner. What do you have for AL NL MVP?
Who's going to win that AL MVP? I got nothing. I have no idea who's going to win it. If I had a vote, it's Mike Trout. I think you're going to agree with me here. I think if you pulled Twitter, which is an interesting thing because we can totally do that now. I think at some point we can maybe when you get the pod cleaned up here and it's ready to stick it on Twitter, we'll accompany that with a couple polls here. But I think if baseball Twitter had a vote, I think baseball Twitter goes with Mike Trout. Then there's the guys that pencil in numbers for like some newspaper companies, and I think those guys are going to go, you know, maybe Altuve, his team was in the race, you know, until maybe the end. You know, Josh Donaldson didn't have the same year that he did last year. You know, but without Donaldson, Toronto does not. I don't think Toronto sniffs the playoffs. I mean, Donaldson, you know, having a guy that can play defense the way that he does and a hitter like that, you know, especially, you know, a guy hitting like that in the second spot in the lineup right there, you know, he makes that lineup ridiculous. Without him, it's like a National League lineup. It really is. But, you know, you put Donaldson in that two spot there in front of those other guys, and you start looking up and down that lineup. You know, Donaldson, it didn't look like he carried the team this season quite like it did last year. I think that had a lot to do with him winning it last year over Mike Trout. You know, of course, Mike Trout had his own, you know, argument for the MVP last year. I've seen this on Twitter. Maybe you've seen it. Maybe you can recall this a little bit better than I am. But basically, Mike Trout's, like, first 5 years in the major leagues has been so like amazingly ridiculous that, you know, it really doesn't compare to anybody else's first 5 years in the major leagues per, if you're looking at the stat war, per war, his first 5 years just on his own level. And the dude has one MVP. I mean, can you really blame Mike Trout for, well, it's, you know, if he was so good at baseball, then, you know, maybe they wouldn't finish dead last. Who was on that team? Daniel Nava? Johnny Giovitella? Who was that? That team is so bad.
Horrific. It was such a garbage team.
Right. Value, you know, value is value. I talk about that, you know, like at the trade deadline, and oh man, my team needed some left hand power, but we got, you know, we got this guy instead. Well, he doesn't have right handed power, but like he's like a well above average defender, you know, that helps your team in this category here. You know, he's adding value. You know, like maybe it's not like that type of value that you thought that you were after there, but value is value. It's just in Mike Trout, whether he added it to a terrible team or not, he's the best freaking player in baseball. And he was last year, and he was the year before, and he probably will be next year. You know, let the guy put a couple MVPs on the mantle, man. He absolutely deserves it. So. That's kind of where I am in the American League. Mookie Betts was super awesome. One of my favorite, you know, players to watch. Like he just, God, that guy, so awesome. I wish he was on the Dodgers. Yeah. That's, you know, sitting here watching these games, you know, all season long, and I'm just picking out guys like, oh man, you know, and I run through the scenarios in my head. Okay, so you know, Mookie Betts is, you know, comes to Los Angeles. You know, Mookie Betts was like a shortstop and a second baseman in the minor leagues. And they kind of moved him to the outfield like right before they called him up to the major leagues. I'm like, okay, so Mookie Betts, well, you know, we like Jock Peterson in center field, so maybe Mookie Betts, hey, maybe we move him back to second base. I mean, he's, you know, you put him at second base, nobody will remember that Howie Kendrick ever even existed. Like, okay, well, maybe instead of doing that, you know, like I played through these scenarios and stuff in my head with some of these players. So Mookie Betts was one of those players where you know, I imagine him in Dodger Blue quite a bit this year, and for good reason. He was awesome, hit home runs. That was another thing, man. You know, he didn't, you know, we thought he was going to be an awesome player, but like, you know, how many home runs have Mookie Betts hit this year? You know, kind of surprising power there from Mookie Betts. So I've got him up there on the list. And, you know, David Ortiz was pretty amazing there in his final season. I've got Mike Trout in the American League. Do you agree?
Yeah, no, I had Trout and you nailed it. The guy is the best player in baseball. It is not his fault. He's on a horrible team run by horrible people that don't know how to put a team together. It's nothing to do with him. The guy is an absolute freak. He was basically playing on the Bad News Bears this year and there's nothing he could do about it. They were horrible. It was just bad all around. I hope they finally – I know that was the big debate. Do they trade him and try to reload? And I'm almost at the point where that might be the only option because that team, the farm system's bad. Everything about the Angels is bad right now. And I hate if you're an Angels fan, I apologize, but it's not looking good. If it's not Trout, that's the MVP. And let me get to something. I think one of my biggest pet peeves about award season – is you have to be on a winning team to get awards is one of the biggest jokes I've seen. Like A-Rod got it that 1 year, but you go through A-Rod's stats, he had better years than his MVP year and they wouldn't give it to him because he was on losing teams. Something about these voters, like you said, they still work at archaic newspapers that no one reads and they somehow still get a vote. It's a travesty. It's horrible for baseball. But Mike Trout is by far the best player in baseball. He has been and probably will be unless he suffers an injury, which I hope he never does because he's so fun to watch. And more importantly, and this is a total just off the rails, he's great for kids. You have all these problems in baseball, and you get kids that can sit and watch a guy like Mike Trout, and he's a perfect example of how to play baseball the right way. And there's a lot to be said about that. But if it's not Mike Trout, I go with Mookie Betts. He was on a winning team. He had 31 homers, 113 RBIs, 122 runs scored, 26 stolen bases, and batted .318. That is an outstanding season of baseball for his, like, second full season of baseball. Gotta love some Mookie Betts in your life. So, yeah, if it's not Trout, I'm going Mookie Betts. Who do you got in the National League? Yeah.
I like that, Mookie Betts. You look at a couple other numbers there, you know, 27% above average on offense there. You know, obviously a great hitter. But the look of what he added to his team, you know, the defense that he played out there in right field, that is a tough right field to play there in Boston. You know, right center field is a huge gap out there. You know, obviously left field's really short, but they make up for it in Boston with the big right field, and that's what Mookie Betts got to deal with there. And he's a great base runner as well. So, you know, those are the players that I like to look at, you know, and he was kind of Mike Trout light. And like you said, the difference there is he was on a winning team there. So, yeah, Mookie Betts, super awesome there. I think that kind of – something kind of interesting about Mike Trout. What – if you had to pick, like, two numbers from Mike Trout's season that screams MVP to you, which ones are they?
If I had to go – if I had one thing – I haven't even looked at his numbers. Where the heck is
without any, like, you know, man, he hits a lot of home runs.
Off my head, yeah, I'm not even looking at homers as much as I know his on base is crazy, but that's because they're probably pitching around him because of the horrible team he's on. But
That's the one that I wanted to get to. That's awesome that you said that. Like, all the awesome things that Mike Trout does, of course, we know about his defense and he can run the bases and, you know, all the home runs that he hits. He had a .441 on base percentage. That shit is banana. That's like Frank Thomas, except for good on defense and runs the bases. That kind of puts you in perspective with what we're looking at here with Mike Trout. And, you know, Frank Thomas went down as one of the best right-handed hitters any of us ever seen. So, yeah, a little bit of perspective there. Mike Trout, super amazing. If you have a vote on the MVP, please vote for him. Of course, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably don't. And also the voting was like a month ago.
Well, I'm looking at his numbers real quick. And so we mentioned how he was in such a horrible lineup, and sure, he had Pujols behind him, and, you know, he was streaky, so when Pujols was hot, he probably got pitched to more. But just to put it in consideration, he had 173 hits, which is crazy when you're getting pitched around like he is. He had 116 walks. That's what I'm referring to as people not pitching to him. So to get 173 hits and 116 walks is just nuts. And he had 29 homers and 30 stolen bases, almost a 30-30 player, which you don't really see anymore in baseball. Right. Yeah, we could – basically what we're saying is we could drool over him all day. He's the best player in baseball. He should win the MVP almost every season. But if not, Mookie Betts. What do you got for the National League?
Yeah, and Mike Trout also hit strikeout rate down a little bit again, back down to like 20% this year too. So a little bit of ice in the cake there. You know, looking over the National League, this is the one I think just verify with you, but I think, you know, everybody's pretty much making their choice between two players. You've got Chris Bryant and Daniel Murphy, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And or the one that's real interesting is you can go Bryant or Rizzo, and if you look at their numbers, they're nearly identical.
Yeah. Cause it feels like we're playing into a good player on winning team kind of theme there. But yeah, I think, you know, Bryant, I think Murphy, and I know Rizzo had great numbers there, you know, but Bryant was that guy, you know, he had a solid, like, first month or two, and then he just really took off and carried the, you know, not that they even needed it, but, you know, club there. Bryant played third base. He played left field. They – they just kind of moved Brian around, you know, wherever they needed him. And he was a capable defender at all of those spots, you know, probably not above average or anything, you know, but yeah. So I think, you know, Bryant, I don't know, man, just that amazing power. He changed a lot of games there. It's tough to look away from Murphy. Daniel Murphy, let's see, you know, was 56% above average per weighted runs created plus. You know, you couldn't, let's see, what did I say? You know, Mike Trout had a 20% strikeout rate and a 17% walk rate, you know, which 17% walk rate is phenomenal. 20% strikeout rate, kind of a typical thing for a big power hitter here. Daniel Murphy, you know, hit 25 home runs. He didn't hit as many home runs as Trout. But looking here, the rate about 10%, you know, making that kind of contact, you know, for Daniel Murphy, that's just kind of amazing right there. And Daniel Murphy was, I think, you know, he was a front runner there for the MVP at the All-Star break in the National League, and it pretty much stayed that way in the second half as well. I think Bryce Harper didn't have the season many of us were expecting him to have, and, you know, Daniel Murphy really kind of made us forget about that. Phenomenal season from Daniel Murphy, but if I got to go somewhere, it's Chris Bryant. He was awesome. The power was awesome. The power was game changing. And especially the second half. So I got to go Chris Bryant.
Yeah, no, Chris Bryant's my choice. The kid's a freak, and this might be the first of many coming his direction. And you pretty much hit everything on the head with that. I might have mentioned two guys if we go off of the they don't have to be on winning teams theory. One's going to be Nolan Arenado. And I know he plays in Colorado, and I know people use that against him a lot. But the kid is amazing. 41 homers, 133 RBIs, only struck out 103 times for a power hitter like that. Is very impressive. He hit .294, on-base .362, raked, absolutely raked, and just amazing ball player. The other one, I want you to see if you can guess who this is because he was on a horrible team. But he had 181 hits, 29 homers, 97 RBIs, 108 walks, a .326 average, and a .434 on base.
Freddie Freeman? Oh, Joey Votto.
Yes. Joey Votto, who everybody hates on year in and year out. You give me numbers like that on a contender, people are screaming MVP. He won it for a reason one year. The year the Reds were in the playoffs and contending. I know by no means is he going to get the MVP, but people forget about stuff like that. His numbers were damn impressive. His on base is almost as good as Mike Trout's. So that's all. That's why I wanted to bring it up. It's crazy how good that guy was stuck on such a bad baseball team. But Chris Bryant
and you know Votto. Votto had that really tough first half. He just struggled out of the gates there, and he turned it on to a level that I don't think I've ever seen anybody do. Right now, just real quick, I pulled up his half statistics there. Weighted runs created plus .201. That means he was 101% better than average. I mean, that's how crazy that is. I don't know what that is. That's insane. By far led Major League Baseball. It's, you know, the ISO 260, you know, tons of power there. You know, you mentioned the on-base skills there, a 15% walk rate in the second half against a 10% walk rate or against a 10% strikeout rate. This is, you know, context, you know, years ago when Albert Pujols went out and he had like 91 strikeouts and 104 walks or something like that, you know, it's like, oh my God, you know, this guy walks more and he strikes out. It's amazing. You know, he's got power and he walks more and he strikes out. It's just, you know, he's on another level. Joey Votto had a 15% walk rate and a 10% strikeout rate in the second half. Yeah, just to underline that a little bit, Joey Votto had a second half like I've never seen before.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I just wanted to bring it to people's attention that it doesn't always have to be a contender, which I just absolutely hate, and I know I've said it a few times, and yeah, he had a heck of a season, especially a second half.
You brought up Nolan Arenado, and, you know, people obviously – you know, discounting his stats, you know, because where he plays his, I'm looking for his numbers here. Let me open up his page real quick here. Interesting thing with Nolan Arenado, 2016 is splits. Let's see. Let me get so at home, Nolan Arenado had a where are we? Oh man, I'm screwing this all up. Okay, at home he had a 132 weighted runs created plus, and on the road a 116 weighted runs created plus. So he was better at home in 2016, but not much. He was well above average on the road as well. You know, so it's really not too fair any of Arenado's statistics because of what he does at home, because he's a phenomenal hitter on the road as well. And then I think if you look back at 2015, those numbers are the opposite. He was actually a little bit better on the road than he was at home. If we click on that real quick, he was 119 weighted runs created plus at home and 119 weighted runs created plus on the road in 2015. So yeah, Nolan Arenado, just kind of an amazing hitter. And then, man, is he fun to watch play defense. So yes, I'm with you there. Gets a little bit underrated there.
Yep. Okay, let's move on to the Rookie of the Years, AL, NL. I'll start it off with my AL. Some people frown upon it because he only played 53 games, but you cannot not pay attention to what Gary Sanchez did for the New York Yankees. 20 home runs, 42 RBIs, .299 batting average, .376 on base, which for a rookie is pretty damn impressive. He did strike out a lot, which was kind of expected. But more importantly, when the Yankees brought him up, they were pretty much saying, let's just start rebuilding. We traded everybody. We're going to let the youngsters play. Let's see what happens. And between Sanchez and some of the other youngsters mixed in with some of the vets, they made a run and were in the playoff race into the last week of the season for a wild card spot, which when they started making their trades, no one thought they had a chance to do. And Sanchez is a huge part of that. He caught 36 games, DH 17, absolutely tore it up. He was a top prospect, so people thought he'd be good, but I don't think they thought he'd be this good this quick. I give my AL Rookie of the Year to Gary Sanchez.
Yeah, obviously, you know, what Gary Sanchez did, what was that? He had the most home runs through 50 games of any player ever.
Yep.
I think he had home runs, did he get to 20? Something like that. It's right around there, like 20 home runs of 50 games. Amazing season there. Elsewhere on the AL Rookie of the Year, I got to go with Michael Fulmer. You know, being a DFS player, and of course you play, you know, a ton of DFS as well. We look at a little bit different numbers than a lot of people there. And one of my favorite, and then, you know, of course I did a podcast for those of you listening that didn't know. Did a podcast with my buddy Ryan Noonan. And Ryan was, you know, when we were looking at pitchers, we were trying to, you know, especially right there in the middle of the season, you're trying to, okay, who's had some fluky numbers, who hasn't, you know, who's actually pitching well this year, who's taking a step forward. And so we're always looking at DRA and CFIP, a couple noon metrics, improvements from older metrics like XFIP and FIP. I don't, you know, if you guys are familiar with those statistics, but it's just another ERA estimator. And Michael Fulmer was near the top of in DRA for basically the entire season, and it was consistent. He started out there from when he made his debut. His first month in the major leagues was awesome. He pitched extremely well. And I know Justin Verlander bounce back season. Verlander was really good this year. Especially after last year and the year before that being just straight bad. But Michael Fulmer, kind of kept Detroit in that race, every fifth day. I just kept waiting for him to fade. And next thing I turn around and it's like the middle of September and he just went out and put up 36 DraftKings points. And I'm like, dude, this guy just does not stop being awesome. Michael Fulmer, a little bit under the radar there, of course, Gary Sanchez being in New York, Sanchez got, lots of publicity there. I think, what Michael Fulmer did in Detroit there, starting for them, Fulmer gets a vote for me there in the American League. Moving over to the National League, I'm going to say Corey Seager. What about?
Yeah, no, I can't blame you one bit there. First off, Fulmer, I can't argue that either. If it's not Sanchez, I hope it's Fulmer. He was absolutely amazing. People thought there'd be innings limits and he'd be disappearing and so on and so forth. He was filthy. Did very, very well for the Tigers. Kept them in the race with Verlander. But, yeah, in the National League, it's Corey Seager and it's nobody else. If Corey Seager does not get the National League MVP, it might be the single biggest awards travesty in the history of awards. You could argue if you wanted to get real goofy, and it's a long shot, but I would not be surprised if even Corey Seager receives some MVP votes. He's not going to get the MVP, but he better get the Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see him getting some MVP votes as well. He's definitely in my top 10 for MVP. And I think he's going to be in most people's top five. Yeah. Corey Seager there in the National League. The only thing we got left is the Cy Young. I think the American League's going to be something's going to open up quite a bit of discussion there. And maybe even the National League. Both of these are going to be pretty interesting here. In the National League, I think, you got a couple Cubs up there near the top that deserve a lot of looks. It's close. I think Hendricks, you got Max Scherzer. Max Scherzer struck out freaking everybody. He's Max Scherzer, and he was really consistent this year. Gave up some home runs, but nonetheless, the run prevention skills, the strikeout skills, Max Scherzer was awesome. Noah Syndergaard was good. I think we unfairly had some kind of expectations for Noah Syndergaard. What do you think about the idea with it being a close race between a lot of really good candidates and maybe not great candidates? What do you think about the idea of handing it over there to Jose Fernandez? He was a favorite pitcher of mine to watch. I have a lot of things to say. Fernandez, maybe we could do another podcast some other time, talking about what Fernandez meant to each of us. He was something else, but maybe we can honor the kid. I think that no doubt there was a Cy Young coming for that kid with the stuff that he had and with the year that he was having, man. A strong September, he'd have been right there in that Cy Young race. So I think maybe with it being so close, what do you think about just giving it to Fernandez?
You 1,000% hit my Cy Young take on the head. It's a very, very tight race. If they're going to give it to someone, I'd say Max Scherzer, just because, like you said, he did lead all of starting pitching and home runs, giving up with 31. But he also had 284 strikeouts, a .99 opponent average, .97 with just, you go down the list, he was lights out. 20-game winner, the only 20-game winner in the National League, 2.96 ERA. He's filthy. Nothing, you can't hide Mad Max. You know who he is. You know who he was. But I was 100% on board on this. If for some reason they don't give it to Max or someone else, I really do think Jose Fernandez deserves the Cy Young, at the least to honor such a great person in baseball. I would be stoked to do another podcast and just dedicate it to the likes of Jose. We should have done one when it happened, but we were all busy doing other stuff. Yeah. And I know we have our group chat, and it was one of those, like, me and you on the West Coast, we're at the East Coast guys, and I remember when I woke up, the first thing I see is like a Bleacher Report update about him passing, and I got the chills, and I was thinking, like, it's really weird for a guy you've never met how he can affect your life. And he was an amazing, amazing baseball player to watch. He was must-see television, like you said. When he started, you wanted to watch him. The kid was an amazing athlete, but most importantly, and people have read it and seen it since the horrific incident took place, the person that he was. And you see it around baseball, and, you know, people pass and things happen, but the way you saw baseball rally around it, you're still seeing it in the postseason. Guys have numbers and JFs on their uniforms. You look at Antonio Brown this Sunday's playing in Miami, and he has special cleats with Jose's face and number on it for him. He's going to wear the Florida Panthers. It's all kinds of stuff still happening. That's how impactful this kid was. And I say kid because he was a kid. Like, yeah. That's what's really crazy about it. Like, I'm not old. I'm in my early 30s, but this kid was a kid. And it was an absolute shame. And I really hope they do give it to him. I know some guys will vote for him, and they'll say they do it out of an honor and blah, 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 and that's awesome. But I really, if there was any way to start a petition or anything, they should give the award to Jose Fernandez. That's my two cents on that one.
I think so. And, you know, it's like you said, you know, it's not like these other guys have, you know, one of those other guys really stuck out, you know, a head and shoulders above the pack. You know, Hendricks had a great ERA and stuff like that. You know, seems like a real good kid. You know, he's got a great change up. And using that change up, he was, for as far as DFS goes, is one of my favorite pitchers because, you know, when you get him out there against, you know, a team that can only hit a fastball that's, you know, goes up there, you know, swinging for the fences early in the count, you know, a team like the Phillies or something like that, he was just an absolute gold mine in DFS. You know, Hendricks, you know, great year, and of course led the National League in ERA, and John Lester, that second half that he had that we kind of mentioned earlier, and talking about his matchup with the Dodgers there. And of course, Max Scherzer, I mean, you know, all guys that had great years, but it's, you know, if you thought that Jose Fernandez had a better season than any one of those guys, I don't know that I'd really argue against you. And then with a little bit of an added bonering, you know, that kid and what he was able to do in his short time in the major leagues, the impact that he had on the league, yeah, I think it'd probably be the right thing to do there. So, yeah, and Jose Fernandez, man, if you're at home, if you've got, you know, you got kids and you got a little one you're going to send off to Little League soon, Jose Fernandez was, you want to teach your kid to love that game and to play that game as did. That says it for me right there. So,
yeah. And like you said, we could have a whole another hour-long pod talking about him. He was an amazing, amazing person, and quite a shame. But, yeah. Let's AL Cy Young, another one just like the National League where, to me, there's really no clear cut on this one either. Like, you had your 20-game winners, but then you had your dominating guys elsewhere. Where are you going with this one?
Yeah, and I'm sure you can all guess. You know, I don't look at wins a whole lot. It was solid. Boston was an awesome team, had a great offense. Boston had the best offense in baseball this year. It was good. The Porcello that pitched in Detroit, that seemed like he just kind of let everybody's expectations down. This was not him. The Porcello that signed an $82 million contract to pitch in Boston after they traded for him. Whole country, baseball Twitter, baseball writers, just everybody completely like panned that deal. This was not him. This was a different Rick Porcello. This was an awesome Rick Porcello. But it was not a Cy Young either. You know, Porcello was awesome, and he very much exceeded expectations. You know, but he's not. I don't think he could be the Cy Young. I don't think we can. You look at the run prevention. You look at the strikeout to walk ratios. You know, he's a ground ball pitcher, and that's a valuable thing and everything. But I think, you know, Verlander definitely outperformed Porcello. Zach Britton was amazing. Was ridiculous. I mean, that dude's got that left-handed split finger that's impossible. It's like a catch 22 when you get up there. It's like you're either going to swing and miss, which you're screwed, but then when you hit it, you're still screwed. Like nothing changed. But it also, he six innings. I can't, you know, if we can give Zach Britton the Cy Young for pitching 66 innings, then in the National League, I'm going to give the Cy Young to Clayton Kershaw, even though he only pitched, you know, 140 innings.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like,
if you're going Britton, then you go Kershaw in the National League. I, you know, like he only threw 66 innings. I don't know I could do Britton. I wish that there was like a better award to give to Britton for what he did this season, other than the Rolaids, the Rolaids Relief Award. Yes. Oh my God.
How do you spell relief? R-O-L-A-D. Yes, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
I wish we had something better to give to Britton because, you know, he really was something out there, but I don't know. I don't know. You can't give him Cy Young. He threw 66 innings. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Verlander was awesome. I think I probably got Verlander over Porcello. You know, Corey Kluber had some pretty big expectations due to what he did in the previous season there. But yeah, he's up there. I flip a coin. I don't know. I just don't know in the American League.
Yeah, it's a really weird year because both leagues, like we said, usually there's always one or two that stand out. There's really, it's not that easy. And like you said, Britton, 66 innings, but he had 74 strikeouts. 47 saves, 0.54 ERA, which is just ridiculous. But yeah, if we're going to starters, which you usually do, it's very rare to see the closers get the love. Happens once in a while, but very rare. I'm going Verlander, 16-9. But more importantly to me, he had a 3.04 ERA, which, you know, huge compared to what we were used to with Verlander. He had 254 strikeouts and 227 innings pitched, which is filth. And a 207 opponent batting average. Yeah, he was awesome, and I loved it. And this is a DFS angle again. I would use him left and right. People would be like, oh, he costs too much. If people paid attention, you look at his numbers, that guy – he paid off for you, I want to say, almost 70 to 80% of the time. It was just that filthy. But if we don't go Verlander, my second choice is Kluber. He wasn't like lights out, but he's still damn good. 216 opponent average, 227 Ks, 215 innings pitched, a 3.14 ERA. He pitched in a ballpark where I don't know the exact metrics this year, but in most years the ball does travel pretty well in Cleveland depending on during the summer months. But you know those stats way better than I do. Yeah, I go Verlander, but it's tough. There's a little bit of arguments you can make for a lot of guys, but Verlander did it very quietly with a lot of hate coming his direction by a lot of people that just said, oh, no, he's garbage. He got it done, and I wouldn't be surprised if Porcello gets love too, just because so many people cling on to the number of wins, and that's just what they cling to. But, yeah, I go Verlander. I'm with you on that.
Who do you think we've got our takes on it, but who do you think the voters put up there? Who do you think wins it?
I think Porcello wins it.
Me too.
It's disgusting because it's like we talked about with I think it was the MVPs that all these guys that write for newspapers, they see 22 wins and an ERA in the low threes, and you got that Boston East Coast media. I think it's going to take a lot of votes right there.
Yep, I agree. The bunch of guys, you know, 40 years ago when those guys were relevant writers, that's what they looked at the end of the year. Oh, this guy was the pitcher of record. You know, this guy went at least 5 innings in a game in which his him more runs than he allowed it to the opposition, and then his team never relinquished the lead from thenceforth towards until the end of the game, and his team held on. Like that's what a win is, and like that's how they analyzed shit back then. Yep. We don't do that now. Those guys are still voting.
Yep, it's a shame. It's the same with I can go on a whole debate about the Hall of Fame, which I think is a joke. Just a lot of these guys that still have privileges. It's something else. But that could be. Let's make a deal. When the playoffs are done, sometime in November, we will do another pod. We'll discuss what went wrong with the awards. We'll discuss the winners of the World Series and whatnot. And then there's one thing we didn't get to. And we're going to talk a lot more. We could have probably done this for 2 hours. About a lot of things that took place, and we'll definitely devote a lot of it to the likes of Jose Fernandez, Vin Scully, some great things that took place in this baseball season. So how's that sound?
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, we'll keep doing this, and we're working on an idea. If it works, people, just baseball guys talking baseball stuff next year. It could be a lot of fun. And any last words, Brock?
Yeah, it'd be a nice change of pace from the high-level stress DFS work that we both do throughout the season there. So, I can't wait to see what happens here in this Dodger season, Dodger series rather, here against the Cubs. Like you mentioned earlier, the playoffs this year has been amazing. We've seen just, you know, so much already. And I can't, you know, just as a baseball fan, American League, National League, the World Series, I can't wait to see what we've got in store for us here. So,
yeah, no doubt. And like always, man, it's fun talking to you. We message a lot on Twitter and everything. Thanks for coming on again. It was awesome. We will definitely do this again. And everybody, that was Bench with Bubba, Episode 8. Don't forget to follow Brock on Twitter, at Brock Ness Monster. Check us out. And until next time, we'll catch you guys later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.